and welcome back to Scottish Independence Podcasts. Fiona here. We've got a bumper edition for you this week. We've pulled out all the speeches from the Believe in Scotland rally in one handy episode. So knock yourselves out. Recorded on location in George Square on the 20th of April. In the interest of time efficiency, I've removed preamble comments from what a fabulous day it is and how sunny it was, but take it from us, it was a glorious day.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the first ever Believe in Scotland march and rally for an independent Scotland hosted in Glasgow. Please welcome Pat Kane.
I was very pleased to be asked to do this, very proud, because I've been standing in George Square arguing for independence for about 30, 40 years of my life. And I wanted to say, I wrote an article for the National this morning. Don't worry, I'm not going to recite it. But it was an attempt to kind of ask myself, in the midst of dire headlines, in the midst of an oppositional media, why did I think independence was an excellent and admirable and desirable idea? And I've just got three things to say in my remaining 3 minutes. It'll take a minute for each. The first thing I dug into, and I realized I stand on this ground no matter what happens with the independence movement, is independence is a peace project. It's interesting, if you read a lot of magazines and you read a lot of opinion editorials, because of various geopolitical maneuvers, people are starting to worry about the bomb again. Do you know what? The bomb never went away. I was reading a book. There's a woman called Annie Jacobson has brought out a book called Nuclear War, A Scenario. And she reminds us that as soon as the Americans observe the flare of the rockets in Russia, the president has 6 minutes to decide when to react. We've been living that way for 30, 40 years. It's insane. And any country, any politics, any territory that has an opportunity to react against that should take that possibility. The moral core of independence is what? Is anti-Trident. So to me, that is the number one reason for independence, is to save the planet. No small ambition, I'm sure you agree. Second thing is, I think that Scotland, we know we're very, very proud of our sustainability, our natural resources, our renewable resources. It's good we can try to make a business out of it. We can do industrial policy about it. We've got lots of business perspectives on it. But you know what? Trouble is coming down the pipe for climate. There is stuff baked in that we're going to have to deal with for the rest of the century. And you know what we've got the opportunity to do in Scotland? We've got the opportunity to build a society, an eco-civilization that's ready for it, that's prepared for it. What is it that we do in Scottish politics? We invent things, we innovate, we try things out. We have the biggest possible challenges when it comes to environmentalism. We're doing it, but we should do it even more intensely. We should be the eco-nation that other nations inspire. Again, the other thing, what was the second thing I thought about independence? What do I believe that independence is for? Independence is about dealing and coping with the future. We know, I've just mentioned the environmental perspective, but you know, we've got machines, artificial intelligences, biotech coming down that's going to challenge our jobs, it's going to challenge what we think we do, whether we do routine, whether we live an extra 30, 40 years because the biologists have figured out how to extend the lifespan. We actually have on one side the limits of the planet, and on the other side, the unlimited nature of technologies. Now, what can you do in a nation? What can you do in a democratic nation? You can decide what to do about what happens in your own country. And that's very much the case when it comes to technology. With the future's coming at us, what's the best way to deal with it? What's the best way to deal with the future? Correct, independence. Third thing, and this is my final point, I could have picked a better day to come to stand and speak in front of a square full of independent supporters, because I don't think our political classes, our party political classes, are serving us very well, no matter where they are. So the one thing I realise about independence is that it's not just independence from above, it's independence from below. In order to be independent, you have to start being independent. And it's so fantastic to see all the different groups, all the different interests. And this week and in 2 weeks' time, again in the same place, I don't care how many demonstrations it is, we see each other and we see each other's power. And their power is from the grassroots. So if you're involved in a grassroots organization who doesn't wait, who doesn't ask for permission, just asks for forgiveness, I salute you and I cheer you. And please go ahead, cheer yourselves. Come on. If you're involved in the grassroots of independence movement, you are the independence movement. And I salute you. And you know what? It can be messy. People can get involved in niche fights and definitions. I don't care. I think the energy that's on display here is exactly that most precious resource that independence has. So in order to be independent, we have to be independent and independent-minded ourselves. So those are my three reasons. We save the world, we deal with the future, and we empower ourselves. What three better reasons could you want to be an independent Scotland? Agreed. All right, thank you very much.
Our next guest is a filmmaker and director, Jane McAllister.
I filmed the lead up to the 2014 independence referendum through the perspective of my family in Musselburgh in East Lothian. And I didn't really mean to make the film. It was fairly tricky. I was actually heavily pregnant at the time, and I wouldn't recommend anyone make a documentary like that. It was full on. I couldn't get any funding. So it's taken me 10 years to get to this point. And I've been touring around Scotland with the film, and it's just been marvelous to like speak to people and hear the feedback and share the story. I was filming my dad, and he initially asked me to film some of the meetings that he'd set up for YouTube. And I just was going to help out because I hadn't picked up the camera in a long time. And I got into these meetings and I had a radio mic on my dad. And it wasn't really the speeches at the meetings, as good as they were, I was already on board. The thing that I was interested in was zooming into these conversations that he was having with activists on both sides, and the passion and the fluency that people were speaking and articulating these discussions. And I thought, this is so interesting and important. And it felt like maybe history was happening. And I actually really felt like I was filming the rebirth of a nation. I don't want to spoil the ending of the film, but I couldn't make it happy. Well, yeah, there's sadness, but actually, going around and sharing this story, what I've found is people find the film completely uplifting, because what it is a record of what we all know happened in the summer of 2014, which was the sheer embodiment of hope and joy. And it happened here in George Square, and people were dancing and singing and coming together and believing in a better future. And that's what I hope that I recorded in the film. It wasn't the divisive referendum that some people would like us to believe. It was totally energised. Everyone had an opinion. No matter what your opinion was, you were expected to have it and you expected to speak it. And as a filmmaker, that was amazing, because I would just go out with my camera onto the street and people would come up and they would talk about the economy. They would talk about currency, about pensions, about nuclear weapons. And yeah, it was just marvellous. And I think it was a time that we should be proud of. And my worry is that people who believe in the union don't want us to be proud of that peaceful movement for change in 2014. And they don't want us to be proud of our civic nationalism as opposed to ethnic nationalism. They don't want to be us to be proud of our moral cause, our socialist values, and our distinct Scottish culture. And the reason they don't want us to be proud is because when we're proud, we're confident, and we know where that's going to lead. So maybe that's why there were so many roadblocks to this film getting out. It's called To See Yourselves, and I think that's what it does. It holds a mirror up to society, and that's what culture and art should do. It helps us understand ourselves. And the thing that observational documentary can do, that, you know, this is not talking heads. This is people on the street. It's natural action happening. And what it does is, what news reporting can't do and what social media can't do, it brings empathy into the debate. And, you know, one of the best pieces of feedback I got was in the screening in Cromarty, where an Englishman said to me, he moved up 3 years ago with his family, and he said, I never understood the desire for independence, and now watching a film I do. And that's all it is, it's just understanding. He's maybe not going to vote for it, but he understands our movement and the emotions behind it. So, I mean, I certainly would like to see a documentary from the other side. I would like to understand it. I think all these stories should be supported. But I will say, you know, this film was actually managed to come out through a number of things. It was support from my family, first of all, and many friends who watched many edits and gave me the support, and people like Pat Kane and Leslie Riddick who watched cuts and gave me the backing that I needed emotionally. And then there was a crowdfunder, which a year ago this week we launched, and it was strangers, people I didn't know, put their hands in their pockets and gave me money to help finish the film. So if anyone here did that, thank you so much. You made this happen, and it made me realise, actually, the big lesson of this whole project was that you have to just do it yourself. You can't really rely on the institutions or the committees or the people that follow rules. You just have to get out there, and I'm just so grateful that people supported me in that. And to that end, we hope that you will help us distribute this film further. So we're releasing it now to groups to screen and take it into your communities. And actually, this weekend, I've released the film for free. It's online. And you'll see there's a QR code here. And there's another one somewhere. If you scan it, you can watch the film tonight or tomorrow. Check it out, and then there's links on that QR code where you can connect with us and we can help you work your way of showing this film. So I hope you enjoy it. You might cry, but I promise you'll laugh as well. It's your story too. Thank you so much.
Our next speaker is trade unionist Gordon Martin.
You know, it's a policy of my union to work for a socialistic order of society. And that's why I believe in independence. Because under the failed Westminster governments of any Tory colour, whether it's Tory blue, red Tory, or any other colour of Tory, we will have child poverty. We will have pensioner poverty. We will have homelessness. We'll have drug and alcohol addiction problems. Now, we need to break that vicious social circle. And I believe the only way we can do it is through Scottish independence. And can I also say, it's fantastic to see our comrades here with the Palestine flags. Cease fire now! And it's also good to see the Scottish Government have the courage of their convictions to at least demand a ceasefire for day one, and not let the Tory, the windbag Tories at Westminster, hedging their bets, vote back in Israel, back in genocide. Absolutely disgraceful. And let's hope they pay the electoral price very shortly. However, we kick out the blue Tories, we may very well end up with the red Tories. But don't lose hope. Let's keep fighting for independence. Let's keep fighting for social justice. And to have social justice, we need social policies. We need an infrastructure policy. You know, we need integrated travel. We need all these things. And to be honest, the Scottish Government could be doing more with the current powers they've got. So we need bold and transformative policies for the current Scottish Government that will enthuse people like you to vote for independence. Weak and managerial policies don't bring votes. So we need to bring back the spirit of 2014, where the people in the schemes right across Scotland were the people driving us forward to independence. That's where we need to get back to. We need to stop tinkering about with policies that suit the middle class and the middle class alone. We need policies that drag everybody up. That's the game we're in. We need social policies. We really need socialist policies, but we're not going to get that for the SNP. So we'll take social policies as a starting point and we'll work for there to build a real country we can all be proud of, a country that takes its place in the international stage, that demands ceasefires in Gaza, that demands an end to the aggression and the genocide, and that demands people are treated as human beings right across the globe. That's why I want independence. You know, I don't want to be a generation that passes inferior conditions, social conditions, onto my kids. That's not the natural order of things. The natural order of things is that my kids should inherit the earth, a better form of the earth than I inherited from my parents. And that doesn't come easy. And as our union rule book says, to work for a socialistic order of society. So that means it's not going to be easy. But demos like this send a clear message to the rotten government at Westminster, the rotten clique at Westminster, and in my humble opinion, the rotten opposition at Westminster, that the people of Scotland aren't going to stand for it. The people of Scotland demand an end to child poverty. They demand an end to pensioner poverty. They demand an end to homelessness. They demand an end to crap housing. We need proper council housing built for the people, especially the young people of this country. That's what we need. And any party or politician that can't sign up to that for me isn't worth voting for. So people that are here in the SNP or the Greens or any other party, ALBA, any party involved in the Indy movement, you need to keep their feet to the fire and keep pushing them to the left, keep pushing them for socialistic policies. Because without that, we'd be as well staying with the rotten mob in London. That's the reality. You know, if you're poor and living in a damp house, it doesn't matter to you if it's a Tory that's put you there or any other form of government. So we need transformative change right across Scotland. And any party that isn't out for that, we need to kick them out. And I'll end with this. You know, it's disappointing here. We've got a lot of the Yes family here, but some have been excluded. And I'm not a member of any party. I've no axe to grind whatsoever. But we need the whole Yes family here. We need the whole Yes family fighting together to end all the poverty issues I've just spoke about. And we need to end the student politics of some of the politicians. I'm not interested in any of the politicians. I'm interested in you guys. So keep fighting. The independent stream hasn't gone away. And hope is always stronger than fear. Solidarity.
Now, for our next guest speaker, Ross Greer.
I don't know about you folks, I think our opponents are a wee bit obsessed. They can't stop talking about independence. They can't stop talking about us. And do you know why I think they're obsessed? I think they're obsessed because they're afraid. They are afraid because we believe in Scotland. Because we believe that this can be a fairer country, a greener country, a more democratic country. We believe that in one of the richest countries on earth, no child should live in poverty. And we believe in the very simple principle that the people who live here should be in charge of this country's future, and they should get the governments they voted for. Our opponents are afraid of all that because they don't have an alternative. They think this is as good as it gets. They think child poverty and benefit sanctions and Tory governments are as good as it gets for Scotland. They think that the choice should be between the cruelty of the Tories and a Labour opposition who don't believe in any change at all. That's not what we believe. We believe that another Scotland is possible, that a better, a fairer, a greener Scotland is possible. And it is the people who will deliver that. And we certainly believe that our country could do so much better, that we deserve better than a government that is continuing to arm the state of Israel while it commits a genocide in Palestine. Please give it up for the Palestine Solidarity Bloc who are marching with us today. And say it with me, ceasefire now. Ceasefire now. Ceasefire now. Friends, beware our opponents trying to divide us. Their latest attempt at division is to try and pretend that there's a story in the SNP telling you to vote for them and the Greens telling you to vote for us. Shock! Two different political parties think that you should vote for them. We do, because we have different visions for this country. But the one thing that we are united on, that all of us here are united on, is that it should be for the people of this country to decide its future, and that we can do so much better than what Westminster offers us right now. And as the Green Party, we know that independence is critical for tackling the climate emergency. It's been a difficult few days for Scotland's climate ambitions. The targets we set, those world-leading targets, they were set by all parties, including the Tories, on the understanding that the UK government would cooperate with us. But they've not. They've ditched their own climate action, and they've cut Scotland's infrastructure budget by £500 million this year alone. That's why on Thursday, the Scottish Government announced a massive new package of climate action to get us back on track, to play this country's full role in tackling that global crisis, and to protect our world-famous natural environment here in Scotland. That is what you're getting from this pro-independence majority government. Friends, the strength of our movement is not in everything that we agree on, I think. It's actually in our disagreements. It's in the range of visions that we have for an independent Scotland. We are united in the belief that it is the people who live here who should make that decision. But we all have a different vision for what that should look like, and we simply want to live in a democracy that allows us to make that choice. The Scottish Greens are proud to play our part in this movement. We are proud to march and campaign with you. And I am more confident now than I have ever been that we are marching towards the day where Scotland's future is in Scotland's hands. Thank you all so much for coming.
Iona Soper writes and presents for Secure Scotland and works at Solidarity Against Neoliberal Extremism.
My name is Iona, my pronouns are she, her, and I believe that Scottish independence is inevitable. And that may be the most optimistic thing I've ever said. I'm mostly conscious that I don't have much time, so just take the optimism, savour it as it passes you by, because it's the last you're going to get from me. I want to talk about what happens after we attain our freedom, because for me, it would be a colossal own goal for Scotland to gain our independence only to replicate on a smaller scale the policies that we've freed ourselves from. The policies that privatise everything from human welfare to climate action. Policies that do not serve the people. And I think this speaks on a number of issues, whether that's the way we organise our housing or our health or our immigration. But I've been invited here today to speak about a subject that none of us can ignore right now, and that's war. I've been a vocal member of the anti-nuclear movement for about 8 years, and the independence movement has been a consistent stronghold for us, as well as a vital part of our strategy. Our independence offers us the unique opportunity to disarm a nuclear state from within, supported by the 70 countries that have already ratified the United Nations Nuclear Ban Treaty. Our rejection of weapons of mass destruction is a key part of us forming our own international identity, and our Parliament's commitment to it is to be commended. Our stubbornness can be a flaw, but it's also one of our greatest strengths. But it doesn't take us far enough. Everyone here today is aware of the ongoing genocide in Gaza, the destruction of hospitals and targeting of aid convoys. engineered mass displacement and widespread famine, the highest daily death rate we've seen in any conflict of my lifetime. In Yemen, over 21 million remain in need of humanitarian aid. More than 4 million children are not in school, and over half of this number are suffering from acute malnutrition. In Ukraine, where schools and hospitals have also been targeted, 6 million have fled, leaving 4 million internally displaced. Now, last year, I was part of a Scottish delegation to northeast Syria, where I witnessed the legacies and realities of war following the Syrian civil conflict, the subsequent occupation of the Islamic State, and the current aggression and occupation of the Turkish. Rivers are dammed up and water sources are contaminated. The desertified landscapes are bare of trees. Electricity, when available, is tightly rationed. All cars have their seatbelts removed so that you can always make a quick exit. We see under-resourced resettlement and refugee camps. We see under-resourced prison camps, mass graveyards for the fallen, and orphanages for children with unique ailments from exposure to chemical weapons. This is what war looks like. It is not problem solving. It is not international relations. It is a humanitarian disgrace. The leaders who seek to enact their dominance in this way believe that they can do so with impunity. The British government affirms this belief on the geopolitical front, offering the bare minimum or less in terms of international solidarity, but critically, at least in the cases of Israel and Saudi Arabia and Russia and Turkey, the UK government has actively profited from the sale of arms production and export licenses to these nations. How can we expect a parliament that runs its own government as a business model to make decisions along ethical or humanitarian lines so long as they maintain this conflict of interest? And how can any nation that wants to operate in this way call itself civilized? Scotland is not immune. We're quick to denounce the conflicts, but we're just as quick to defend our own arms industry, even in the face of them manufacturing parts for nuclear weapons, even in the face of atrocities such as we've seen in recent months. If there is one message for Scotland's future that people here can take away from me speaking today, it is this. There are better things for Scotland's economy than dead children. There are better things for Scotland's economy than torture. There are better things for Scotland's economy than genocide. We have seen what is possible when united Scottish workers down their tools and refuse to be complicit in war crimes. Our stubbornness can be a flaw, but it is also our greatest strength. Here's a lesson you learn quickly when living at the Faslane Peace Camp. Self-determination comes with responsibility. An independent Scotland must make a clean break with all forms of British imperialism. Opposing nukes is great, but it's not enough. We must reject the industry of arms for profit and diversify those skills, technologies, and workforce to support other key industries. Our independence should not isolate us internationally. Rather, it is a chance for us to finally shake hands with other nations with our wrists free of shackles and take accountability for ourselves. It's a chance to develop a model for a Western nation that acts not like the bully in the playground, or not like the pompous kid who broke the vending machine so he could sell sweets at an inflated rate, and not like the kid who stands by and accepts these behaviours as inevitable. Scotland deserves better, and the world deserves better from us. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Richie Venton.
Friends and comrades in the struggle for independence, the Scottish Socialist Party is proud to have been the socialist wing of the independence movement for the past 25 years. And we believe that workers, trade unionists, young people, pensioners, the unemployed and others on benefit all need to be shut of the rule and ruin of this country by a Tory government that never got a majority for the last 69 years in Scottish elections. The working class majority of the population, in all this glorious diversity of colours and creeds and genders and countries of origin, need to see independence as a route to change, fundamental change, socialist change, to the benefit of the millions and not the millionaires. The benefit of the proverbial butchers, bakers and candlestick makers, and not to the benefit of the 20 families in Scotland that own more combined wealth than 1.7 million of our people in this country. Our goal of an independent socialist Scotland is to enforce a radical, fundamental and irreversible transfer of wealth and power away from the rich to the rest of us through measures that immediately match people's needs. Measures like a minimum wage in today's money of £15 an hour for everybody over 16, with equal pay for women. Measures like a four-day week for 5 days' pay as a first step to harness the marvels of science to liberate the working class from drudgery and free them up to run society. We want voluntary retirement at the age of 55 instead of being compulsory into working for a pittance till you drop. We want a society free of poverty, pollution and social isolation by taking all forms of public transport into public ownership and using the wealth freed up from people like the Easdale brothers, one half times over billionaires who own McGill's, and using that wealth ripped off from the passengers to provide free public transport for people of all ages as a means of combating poverty and pollution. To drag Scotland into the 21st century on fleets of clean, green buses, trains, subways and ferries in order to create tens of thousands of jobs in the process. We want a Scotland that ends the situation where Grangemouth workers are fearful for their jobs, for green wind farm jobs have collapsed by 4,000 in the last year. A Scotland where retired ex-miners, North Sea oil workers, shipyard workers, nurses, in fact a million households shiver through the winters whilst the fossil capitalists in BP, Shell, INEOS and others rake in billions in profit by ripping us off. We want an end to that. We want a Scotland with democratic public ownership of all forms of energy to ensure a rapid transition to green energy production led by workers in the industry themselves, who are the experts after all. We want to provide clean, green, affordable energy to homes and to retrofit every home free of charge, creating an estimated 70,000 jobs in the process. Our vision is a Scotland where we can put an end to the racist, divisive incitement about talk about stopping small boats, and instead we stop the big boats, the very big boats, the nuclear submarines who are infesting the waters of the west of Scotland with warheads who could wipe out an entire population. The Scottish Socialist Party stands for a Scotland that redirects the 220 into building publicly owned hospitals, publicly owned schools, I don't mean public schools, I mean publicly owned, quality council housing for rent, and a publicly owned national care service fit for the 21st century. We want a Scotland that gives refuge, warmth, and the right to work for a decent wage to all the huddled masses fleeing from war, famine, and straightforward poverty, to enrich a democratic socialist republic with their cultures and their humanities. That's the kind of Scotland we want. We welcome the fact that the Scottish Government has already called for an end to the war of genocide against the Palestinian people. But we would appeal to the same Scottish Government to stop using public funds to subsidise the profits of the very same arms companies who are making billions a killing out of war, out of slaughter, out of famine in the Middle East. Stop fattening the profits of the warlords. But through the powers of independence, control over defence, over foreign relations, over trade and other things, we want a Scottish Government that can ban all arms sales and the production for war, to send fleets of food ships, medical supplies and reconstruction equipment to the Palestinian people instead of shipments of F-35 stealth bombers and surveillance equipment that hunt down and slaughter men, women and babies. Comrades, we want a Scotland where the defence industry is nationalised under the democratic control of workers and communities to utilise the skills of those workers to provide the ferries we need, the offshore energy production equipment we need, the hospital equipment we need, production for peace and not for war, truly turning swords into ploughshares, as the book said. And I'll finish with this point. My appeal to you, assembled here today, is go back into your workplaces, your communities, your schools, your colleges. Convince thousands of others of the power of people's power to bring about that future. Use people's power to fight for a democratic, independent, socialist Scotland that can be a beacon to other people for a clean, green, socialist country that puts people and the planet before the profits of the plutocrats. Go forth, build and seize that future that we're trying to create. Thank you.
Now, our next guest is Marlene Halliday. She also is a co-presenter on the podcast with Fiona McGregor.
So today, we were marching here. The banner at the front of the march said, independence to end pensioner poverty. So when Scotland is independent and we've become that nation again, yeah, then we can create a decent retirement pension. But I think we need to start that process now, and I'll tell you why. We've got a current state pension. It's called the UK New State Pension, 220 quid a week. Dead generous, isn't it? But if you're 70 or over, you don't get that. You get 50 quid a week less than that. You get 170 quid a week. Now, some 70, 71-year-olds depend on that 170 quid a week. So can we not do something now to address that? I think we can. So in Scotland, we've got the Scottish Child Payment. It's for low-income families. It's now at £25 a week for each child. Parents say how much, you know, less stressful their lives are because they know that money's coming in. It's been described as an absolute game changer for inequality. So how about a Scottish pensioner payment? And yeah, initially we aim it at the folk who are dependent on that pension. How about just 10 quid a week to start off with? I mean, that would make a difference. And that would be a caring thing to do. That would give people some more dignity. And isn't that one of the things that we want our government to do, to help make people's lives easier and give them that dignity? So think about it. I'm not quite sure where the First Minister is, but he's around here somewhere. Think about it, a Scottish pensioner payment to help the pensioners who are really dependent on that measly 170 quid a week. So the other thing that was on the banners, of course, is about independence. And I have to say that people my age, we're not convinced. Now, some of us do quite a lot to try and convince more folk, but we haven't managed it yet. For every pensioner who wants Scotland to be independent, there are two pensioners out there who want to stay in the UK. But for those of you who are 16, 25, 30, for you it's completely the other way around. More than two-thirds of you want Scotland to be independent. So look, I'm well gunned by. So listen, we need to start talking to each other. Folk my age need to start talking to you and vice versa. How about we set up some sort of cross-generation conversation project? And, you know, in Ireland, when they were making changes to their constitution, just imagine, they've got a constitution. It's written down. They can make changes to it. But the young folk phoned up the older folk and they helped them to come round to what the changes that they were wanting to make. So yeah, if you're in that younger age group, yeah, of course, talk to your grandparents, but talk to your grandparents' pals. If you've got an elderly neighbour, help them take their bins out. Help them get their messages up the stairs and the lifts, because I tell you, it's always really appreciated if you do that kind of thing. Get chatting to them. Tell them why Scotland being an independent nation is important to you. Tell them what a difference you think it would make to you, but also tell them what a difference it would make to them. Point them to Pensioners for Indie groups. Point them to our website. And when you've had a go at that a few times and you've found out the kind of things that can persuade older people, well, then you need to get your message out to a wider audience. And at that point, get in touch with me. Come and talk to us at Scottish Independence Podcast, or talk to the Broadcasting Scotland people, or write something for the National. So we need you younger folk to give folk my age a nudge. Just persuade some of those maybe's aye, maybe's no pensioner to give your futures a bit more weight than they are doing at the moment. And then listen, in return, we're going to give you a nudge, because you younger folk, yeah, you're convinced about independence, but you're not so good at actually going out and voting for it. See us. We're really good at going out for vote for it. We've got long memories. We can tell you why it's really important to go and vote if you want to change things. Because I'll tell you, we've seen some pretty awful people getting elected down into Westminster over the years, particularly a certain woman Prime Minister. So you persuade us about a bit more and give us a nudge about, you know, why independence is so important to you and what your dreams are about it. And we'll give you a nudge to go and vote. So those two things, Scottish pensioner payment and cross-generation conversations. If we do that, we'll give the polls a wee nudge. And then we can give them another wee nudge. And at some point, hopefully not too far away, we can come here and we can really celebrate.
James Robertson is a poet, novelist, short story writer and editor.
I'm going to read you one poem. It's called A Shortbread History of Scotland, and it's very easy to follow because it's entirely in cliches, and it goes like this. Hail Caledonia, whiskey galore, make it in Livingston, Lochaber no more. Glasgow's miles better, a Gordon for me. Pure dead brilliant, you'll have had your tea. Keat Mila Falcha, Camawa Ben, will ye no come back again? Kimmera how, off ye no wheel, Jock Tamson's bairns in the land of the leal. Scotland free or a desert, the stag at bay. Pay no poll tax, Scots wha hae. Lead on, Macduff, that wasna me. Up with the bonnets, a bonny Dundee. A parcel of rogues, the thin red line. Granny's healing hame for auld lang syne. Haste ye back, come on, get aff. Muckle fat sumph, stupid wee naff. Here's to us, was like us, made from girders. Lovely biscuits, there's been a murder. The blood is strong, Dunsire blue. Where's your Wally Shakespeare new? Thank you. The second thing I'm going to read is based on a phrase that many of you will be familiar with that comes on at the end of the 6 o'clock news or the 10 o'clock news on the BBC. It's that moment when they have to hand the news on from the London studio to all the other studios around the UK, including to the studios in Scotland. And this phrase, I think, was probably created by a committee that was supposed to find something that would not offend anybody. But I find that it offends me all the time whenever I hear it. And the phrase is, the news where you are. So I'm just going to read this wee piece for you and then make way for the last couple of speakers. That's all from us. Now it's time for the news where you are. The news where you are comes after the news where we are. The news where we are is the news. It comes first. The news where you are is the news where you are. It comes after. We do not have the news where you are. The news where you are may be news to you, but is not news to us. The news may be international, national, or regional. The news where we are may be international news. The news where you are is never international news. Where you are is not international. The news where you are comes after the international and national news. The news where you are may be national news or regional news. However, national news where you are is not national news where we are. It is the news where you are. If the news where you are is national news, it is only national where you are. The news where we are is national wherever you are. On Saturdays, there is no news where you are after the news where we are. In fact, there is no news where you are on Saturdays. Any news there is not where you are. It is where we are. If there is news where you are, but not where we are, it'll wait until Sunday. After the news where you are, comes the weather. The weather where you are is not the national weather. The weather where you are comes after the news where you are, and after the weather where you are comes the national weather. Do not confuse the national weather with the weather where you are. The weather where you are comes first, but is lesser weather than the national weather. Extreme weather is news. However, weather that is more extreme where you are than where we are is not news. Weather that is extreme where we are is news, even if extreme weather where we are is only average weather where you are. on average, weather where you are is more extreme than weather where we are. Tough shit. Good night.
Gordon McIntyre Kemp.
Now, 10 years ago this September, Scotland had an independence referendum. And I don't know about you, but I think it's high time we gave the Scottish people a chance to correct the mistake we made that day. And none of this 10-year plans or 15-year plans. I don't want to hear anybody else telling me, oh, I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime, because it can. How about we start a new campaign? How about we say right here, right now, we're starting a new campaign to get a mandate from the Scottish people for Scotland to be an independent nation at Holyrood 2026? If we can't agree terms on a referendum, we'll make it a de facto referendum and Scotland will become an independent country. Since 2014, the United Kingdom has changed. The UK that existed back then has become an international embarrassment. Brexit, the cost of living crisis, a farcical response to COVID, and also mass corruption in the PPE supply chain, which has never been properly investigated by the police. The United Kingdom of 2014 is a very different country, and if we asked the Scottish people the same question now, they would give a very different answer. And folks, that's why we're not going to agree a referendum with Westminster, because they know if there's a referendum, the United Kingdom is finished. But Scotland doesn't need a referendum to become an independent country, and it sure as hell does not need the permission of the Westminster government either. So maybe let's stop asking for a Section 30. Because a Section 30 is just a temporary transfer of power from Westminster to Holyrood. And who wants a temporary transfer of power? That suggests that Westminster has sovereignty over Scotland, and it certainly does not. So let's demand the power to have a referendum on any subject the Scottish people want, whenever the Scottish people want one. But folks, don't hold your breath, because Sir Keir Thatcher, democracy snatcher, is never going to agree to a referendum. He's about to be handed a massive majority, one of the biggest in British political history. It would be akin to being an elected dictator, and he does not give a damn about Scotland and will not have to listen to the people of Scotland. So the writing's on the wall. As far as I'm concerned, it's a de facto referendum in 2026. That is the choice of the UK government, because obviously the Scottish government has been asking for a referendum. The Scottish people have asked for a referendum in multiple elections. They think it's a good choice because they think it'll divide us, because they're making us choose to vote for a political party rather than to vote for our nation. But it's going to rebound on them, because as soon as the Scottish independence movement has a target, as soon as we have a road to independence, we will be able to come together and unite. And when we come together, no one can stop us. Now, folks, I hear people say that independence is the dream that won't die. Yeah, fair enough, I like that. But how about we stop talking about it as a dream and start talking about it as a plan with a deadline. And let's get people activated, and let's go out there and talk to the undecided, engage them, and find a way to understand why they haven't voted for independence in the past and bring them over to our side. Now, last summer, Believe in Scotland published its Road to Independence, and it had a constitutional convention on Scottish independence at its heart. After this general election, let's get that out of the way, launch a new constitutional convention on Scottish independence, and get every single Yes group, every single political party, every campaigning organisation, every think tank, everyone included. This can't be a elites talking house or conversation amongst political elites. It has to involve everyone within our movement, and also it has to involve the people of Scotland. It has to be a new national conversation. Let's go out to the streets with this convention and ask people to tell us what are their dreams, their hopes, and their aspirations for Scotland. Let's get them to tell us what they would change to make Scotland a better place. And if they tell us the type of country they want us to build, then they will vote for that plan when we put it back in front of them before Holyrood 26. Over the next few weeks, Believe in Scotland, and we'll reach out right across the Scottish independence movement, every political party, every single Yes group. We want to talk to you and get your ideas as to how this convention would work. Everyone must be included. Now, some people might exclude themselves, but I don't think so. I think when we've got an opportunity to deliver independence, all the petty squabbles will disappear. And the reason for that is because independence support doesn't change like the wind. Political support might go up and down, but we carry the idea of an independent Scotland in our souls, and therefore it's only going to grow and grow and grow. We, the independence movement, activists for an independent Scotland, we carry our nation's fate with us, and Scotland carries us, and we will keep on campaigning until we win. It is my greatest honour to be able to stand in front of activists like yourself, in front of grassroots activists, in front of people who march with whatever organisation, who deliver leaflets, who man stalls for any political party, because there's hard work to be done, and we are going to do that hard work. Tomorrow morning at Langside Halls, there should be 40, 50 of us delivering leaflets on the south side of Glasgow. Come and join us. But I want to say that as far as the independence movement goes, you guys are my heroes, the people who will actually do the work, who will turn up, who will give out a Saturday and work for independence. Let's make this happen. Let's come together. And soon, Scotland will be an independent nation again. Thank you very much. Thank you.
The First Minister of Scotland, Hamza Yousaf.
Glasgow, what a beautiful sight you are! Did I not tell you in Edinburgh, when we rallied together, that the sun always shines on the righteous? And it has once again. Look at you in all of your beautiful diversity. Look at you, we've got those from Yes Borders to Yes Shetland. Look at you, we've got the pensioners for independence, the EU citizens for independence. We've got bikers for Yes. We've got all of the Yes movement and all of your beautiful diversity represented here today. And let me tell you, you look bloody gorgeous, Glasgow. Friends, look, the last 48 hours have been tough. Been a bit of a shock for some of us in the movement, for example, for those in the SNP. But let me say this much, that we can't always choose what happens to us in life. But what we can choose is how we react. And let me ask you, when it comes to the obstacles that come our way, just because obstacles are thrown in our way, are we going to pack our bags and go home? Or are we going to fight for what we believe in? Are we going to go to every single city, every single town, every single village, every single island, every single doorstep, every single tenement, every single person, and talk to them and tell them that this country's best future is as an independent nation in the European Union? And that is what we're going to do. And you know, our opponents, they've tried to write us off over the years. It was Lord George Robertson who said that with devolution, the independence movement would be killed stone dead. And here you are, very much alive. They said, our opponents, they said, oh, you'll never get a pro-independence party as the Scottish Government. Well, here we are. They said, you'll never get a pro-independence majority. And we literally broke the electoral system. And here we are with our partners in the Green Party, a pro-independence majority government. And in the last few days, my friends, in the last few days, they've said the independence movement is finished. Well, you don't look finished to me, my friends. And why? Why do we do what we do? Because we are driven by our values. It is our values that drive our desire for independence. I don't want independence only for its own sake. I see it as a means to a fairer, a greener, more prosperous, more equal Scotland. And if you ever want a demonstration of our values, this very square is a demonstration of our values. How many times have we gathered here in defiance of Westminster rule? When it comes to Westminster, who've created the hostile environment, the Westminster of Windrush, of Go Home Vance, the Westminster who wants to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda, have we not come here time and time again, not in our hundreds, but in our thousands, and we've said loud and clear, refugees are welcome here. Or take matters further away from here, and we've seen a complete and utter lack of moral courage from Westminster when it comes to having failed the people of Gaza. And is it not the case that week after week after week, the good people of Glasgow have come to this square to say to the people of Gaza, you are not alone. We have come here in our thousands, week after week, to demand an end to occupation, an end to the violence, and an end to selling arms to Israel. We must see an end to the arming of Israel while so many innocent people are being killed. And when I talk about our values, let's also talk about our pensioners. And I'm delighted that this rally has been led by Pensioners for Independence. Let's give it up for the Pensioners for Indy, the Pensioners for Yes. And if you want a demonstration of the contrast of values, well, look how Westminster has failed our pensioners, failed to protect TV licenses for over 75s, failed entrenching poverty of our pensioners through the mismanagement of the UK economy by Westminster. And ladies and gentlemen and friends, the biggest betrayal is the betrayal of the WASPI women. And we stand here as a movement to say to each and every single one of those women, my mum included, by the way, that we will stand with you in your fight for justice and your fight for compensation. And that, my friends, is why we stand here. And that is why is so important that we are all here united for that cause of independence. That's why I was so delighted, as you heard from Gordon, to work with Believe in Scotland, to work with the Green Party and the SNP all together to lay the groundwork for a constitutional convention. But be in no doubt, my friends, the cause of independence, regaining our nation's independence, will not be won by politicians, it will be won by the people. It will be won by you. And my friends, it is the last yards that are the hardest. It is the last hard that it will be through our hard work, through our perseverance, that we will regain our country's independence. And we have to. We have to. Because every day that goes by, broken Brexit Britain is squandering the potential of land. Those who unfortunately have passed on and didn't get to see independence in their life, we owe it to those giants, the Margot MacDonalds, we owe it to the Winnie Ewings, the Neil McCormacks, the Bashir Ahmeds, the George Leslies, we owe it to every single one of them and to those generations who are yet unborn. It's for us to finish the job. That job that was started by our brave countrymen and women, not decades ago, but centuries ago, as they stood in defiance of Westminster rule. And they said that no man has a right to halt the progress of a nation. That was what they said. And I believe, my friends, that if we are driven by our values, if we are and put at the centre of our campaign love, compassion, empathy, then I don't doubt that we will achieve our nation's independence. So friends, believe, let's work harder than ever before, and my goodness, what a prize at the end of it. I promise you, if we do that, we will win and regain our nation's independence. Thank you very much. God bless.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you found some inspiration in some of those speeches. We'll be back again next Friday with our next episode of Scottish Independence Podcasts. Catch you later. Bye now.